Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 12 of Digital Divination. We are 6 months in on our journey here.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. You know, it's like we've been with No Direction for over 6 months, though.
That's fantastic. And it's been nothing but good. Everything that I've seen, you know, has been a great sense of community among the people and you know, just more and more great stuff they keep doing. It's frankly a great network to be part of. I've been really happy with it.
Yeah, I really didn't know what to expect. I knew that they had this broad reach and they did all this cool stuff. I didn't realize they were like regular people that just wanted to play games and help out and do stuff. And they were happy to help us out and let us do our thing. And so it's this has been really, I felt like I was working really hard with getting the podcasts out and getting exposure. And now it's like, I can just work on the podcast. And that's actually the fun part, you know?
Well, and Merck are making that better, which is going to be sort of then get the reach and it's better for everybody. That's really cool.
Yeah. So how you doing? You know, we haven't talked for a couple weeks.
Oh, I am, you know, we're hanging in there. School started and that is a challenge when you've got three little ones like I do. But we're hanging in there. I think that having the summer to think about how this whole distance learning thing was going to go has been a real advantage.
Wait, see, I'm actually starting teaching next week, and I haven't thought about anything during the summer.
You've had all summer to plan, John. That's the point of the summer, is for you to get ready for the fall.
No. You know, part of it is, it's like, I don't want to do different stuff than I've done, you know?
Well, you know, you talked about your preparations both for the game and for the class. Yeah. And so a lot of it is just pulling up what you'd done before and doing that, I presume, in a different medium. You're not going to be going in person, are you?
No, I'm not. But, you know, the funny thing is I've actually recorded all the lectures I've ever given for the past 10 years.
Wait, and so, really?
Yes. I was a pioneer on doing this a long time ago, basically doing a screencast of them. So, you know, it's like in Zoom where you share a screen and you can hear somebody talking about it. That's what I've captured all my presentations with me explaining what it is for the past 10 years. And during the summer, I actually have taught online for the past 6 years. And so now I'm just adapting some of my classes that had been face-to-face to more kind of online. And so it's really not a big deal. It's more like I got to change some things around. How do I get more interaction with the students in an online environment compared to face-to-face? And then talking to some colleagues, it turns out they really don't want a lot more interaction. You know, they don't. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, I'm
good with that.
But if you've been doing this, though, you're already a step ahead of them, right? Because if their big concern is, how do I get the education across? And that's where their attention is focused. You're like, no, I know how to get the education across. Now I'm looking at improving it. And so I can see why their attitude would be, wait. Well, I'm not even to the improve it step, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of older faculty who, you know, are put it this way, they like their chalkboards.
Fair enough. I would be the same. I have not done hardly any teaching. I just did a little bit of assistant teaching. When I was a lawyer, I did assistant teaching at a law school to sit in for a couple classes and teach the students about the area of law I knew well. And so I had a little bit of in front of the whiteboard teaching experience, but very little.
Well, it's fun. This is my 20th year of teaching, and it's all been, you know, university students, and I enjoy it. But one of the things I really enjoy is the face-to-face, you know, kind of the communication and working with students. And one thing that I've learned a lot over the summer and previously because of the pandemic, having GM'd a lot online, is I can get a lot of same interaction in the online environment. As long as the students are open to talking and doing stuff and playing some of my games, I think we'll be fine.
Well, what's something, what's a similar type between online gaming and your online teaching? What are some things where there's, where's the overlap? Where are some similarities about drawing people into what you're trying to say?
Well, I think a lot of it is providing material in a way that they understand it, and then giving them a chance to interact with it in a way that's kind of interesting to them, where they learn something new, where it's kind of surprising or exciting, and then helping them build on it. You know, similar to how a GM kind of facilitates running a homebrew or AP or scenario, you know, you kind of lay the story out for them. You give them some bits and pieces, but then they have to drive it forward. As a teacher, that's the way I like to teach. I don't like to, here is a bunch of information, memorize it. I hate that. So okay. what I like to do is, here's a bit of information. Here's a story related to it. In classes, I always tell lots of stories. Then I get them to talk about what that means to them or explain their own experiences or somehow drive it forward. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping I can do. And so my intention is, I'll provide a bunch of stuff online where this is stuff you need to learn. And then the normal class time periods, I'll actually meet with individuals and groups to talk more about the stuff that they're learning or having difficulty with, or where they want to go, or what they want to do when they grow up, or whatever.
What the things that make them connect that. I had a law professor who referred to that as seeing the unicorn. I don't know if I mentioned this to you before. He said when people were picking out what the constellations were in the sky, right? And or they're trying to teach what the constellations were. Let's say there's a unicorn constellation. They'd be like, okay, you see that star there. All right, and you see that star there, and you see that star. A teacher points out the different pieces of data, but it's up to the student to be able to suddenly have that aha moment, like, wait, I see it. I see the unicorn that is in the stars up there, right? And so he talked about teaching toward when students see the unicorn.
Yeah, the aha moment is what you really like to see, and where the student just lights up and starts getting excited and say, oh, this means this, and we can do this, and we can do this. And so for me, doing a lot of stuff related to starting businesses and things like that, it's really cool to see the students understand kind of the underlying aspects of a business model, what really makes it tick. You know, they see the front-facing part, but they don't understand why this particular thing works. You know, they see Uber everywhere. They don't really understand why peer-to-peer sharing like that is so inexpensive for a business to get started compared to starting a taxi service, and what allows it to grow, you know, phenomenally in such a short time period. You know, right. those sorts of things. So anyway, so I'm glad we could connect up. You know, it's always it's a challenge during the summer for us because our schedules are kind of over the place. And it's funny today, you know, I sent you a message this morning and I went about doing some stuff. And then at 2 o'clock, I went out kayaking because it was gorgeous weather and we decided we're going to go kayaking. And of course, we can see how calm the water is from our place up in Camino. And at 2:15, you said, oh, yeah, let's do it at 4.
That's right. How about 4?
and I come back at 3:58 and I said, oh, great. Yeah, sure. I'm here. And I get it all set up and hoping that you're like waiting with bated breath. And,
because I hadn't heard from you, yeah. I went off to do this other thing. Yep. And then I'm suddenly at 4:45. I see your text from 4 saying, oh, I just got back from kayaking. And let me tell you, my first gut response to that was some pretty unmitigated joy, right? Because the fact that you are just kind of taking an afternoon and to go kayaking, I mean, that's not a thing you'd have been able to sort of just cavalierly go off and do.
Oh, this is the first kayaking I've been able to do in 3 months since the surgery. My wife and I, this is the first time we've been able to go kayaking.
That's fantastic.
And it was gorgeous out. You know, the water was perfectly calm. It was about 75 degrees out. And as we were coming in, we thought, oh, this is really cool. I thought, oh, that looks like a well watching boat over there. We're looking at it. And then two dolphins surfaced right in front of us.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and kind of went around us. And I was like, you know, that's not something you see every day.
No, so, that's great. That's great that you're able to sort of get back out and do that again.
So pretty exciting. In fact, the weather's so nice out here that I think we're going to stay all the way through this weekend, all the way through to next weekend. And we've never done that because we have a cat at home and we have to visit him like periodically to feed him and clean his litter box and stuff. So this time we brought him up with us. We thought, you know, we're going to see how he does. And we got these, there's this kind of pheromone spray and treat you can give him to calm him down. And it seemed to work. So it's like, now we can spend a lot more time up here because we're just going to bring our cat and dog up here each time.
Awesome. And then be able to stay. I do have, I think we're going to go, not this weekend for Labor Day, but next weekend. We were talking about going camping again. I got thrown for a little bit of a loop and we're still scheduling it because that is PAX Online.
Yes.
And I haven't been attending a lot of conventions. I sort of go when the folks at Paizo say, hey, you've got a panel to sit on or announcements to make. And I've got a lot of the work that I've been doing at Paizo is involved with a adventure path that has not yet been announced. It was going to be announced at Gen Con, and then it wasn't announced at Gen Con. They decided to push back the announcement. And so I made these camping plans, and they're like, oh, well, PAX Online, we're actually, Ron, we need you because we need you to make the announcement finally for this thing. So I'm like, well, I was going to go camping, but I'm super excited to be able to talk about this thing. Anyway, but the scheduling is still up in the air. It sounds like we may do it Friday instead. I'd still be able to go camping, but we'll
see. You can announce from your phone. You could do it by your phone.
No. I want to have more interaction with my co-announcers. Okay. It's a couple of projects that go together. We've got one of our authors that has worked sort of across the board on some of these projects. I'm just, the way everything fits together is very exciting for me. I love it when different pieces of lore or products and stuff like that kind of all come together to make a really great experience for the user. Because I think it's fun to be able to say, oh, here's this neat adventure path. Let's buy the first one and run it. But I think it's way more fun to be able to say, oh, well, here's this brand new adventure, but let me pick the a past one, you know, Iron Gods, which was all sort of techie-based. People say, oh, well, we could get this first one of Iron Gods, but there's this whole technology book that just came out to tell us about it. And there's this other thing that's about the land in which it's set, and all this stuff kind of feeds into each other, kind of goes back and forth about the same kind of project, and it's, I just think that's a lot more fun and immersive for the players. So I love it when things like that happen.
So this sounds like kind of a big deal at going to happen here at PAX Online.
That's true. There is, and this is all on the Pathfinder side. There's also going to be some announcements on the Starfinder side, including announcing an adventure path that I'm writing for.
Oh, so cool.
I'm going to be doing another one.
Nice. Well, you know, I don't have any really exciting stuff like that to say. I will say that I'm glad we scheduled this here earlier today because when we came back from our get together, you know, the little house that's on the greenhouse that's on the left as you're facing the water.
Yes,
they have a sign up there that says Bachelorette Party, and so I think it's going to be kind of loud tonight.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it depends on whether or not it's a raucous sort of house party or whether they're going to be a scrupulously social distancing masks and 6 feet apart party. But those get loud too because people have to shout at each other to be heard. Yeah. Either way, you're in for loud.
Well, that particular house, it's a small cabin with a huge deck though, and I think it's all going to be out on the deck.
So. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I got in the mail today the new soft cover core rule book.
Yes.
For Starfinder? Oh, man, this thing is – I needed this a million years ago. It is so handy. It is like just, you know, not even twice as big as like a paperback, you know, like a regular paperback novel. And it's got everything, all the errata. Oh, man, this is awesome for toting around up here. So I was pretty psyched. But we have to talk about something related to Starfinder now.
All righty.
And so I was telling Ron, I'm going to throw him – kind of a curveball here a little bit. I'm not going to tell him what it is in advance. So up until this episode, I actually gave him what we're going to talk about for the whole thing. So he knew. And so this time he doesn't know.
We are. So, before you get into surprising me with whatever it is, I do want to say that some of the shows on No Direction seem like they're very well scripted. You know, the people like they're talking like they're going through an outline We are sort of famous for just kind of meandering, but even our meandering sometimes is a little bit scripted, right? We've at least talked about, here's the questions that we should answer. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's, here's questions we maybe don't answer yet, or here's sort of broad topics, but we haven't even done that. So I'm ready for this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When I say that, you know, having a script, it's usually kind of a loose collection of words that we might, that are suggestions of what we could talk about. That's usually what I provide. So it's not really anything. All right. So, you know, we've covered a lot of ground, a lot of big topics. And I thought today we could talk about something a little more specific. And I thought we pick something that both of us are pretty comfortable with and familiar with, just to kind of make it easy. And I think it's going to be relevant here coming into the near future as well. And I thought we would talk about a particular class of within Starfinder, in particular, talk about operatives.
Ooh.
So I have been thinking a little bit more about what I'm going to be doing with my character. Not so much. So in right now we're playing Dawn of Flame, and Ron is GMing us through book four, which we're almost done with.
Almost a couple more sessions.
Right. And then I'll have to put that character away for a bit, and then I'll be GMing book five. But Jason Tondro has said he would GM book six. I haven't asked him about it. It's going to be a couple months out. I figured I'd wait.
I did. Yeah. We actually, I had him over for a socially distant, non-noisy backyard party just the other day. Yeah. And we talked about it, and he mentioned he's still excited for that.
Oh,
like
excellent.
Like me, he's sort of craving sort of social connection interaction. Yeah. So he's still on board for this as of a couple weeks ago.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. So I was thinking, you know, thinking about that. Oh, well, then I'll have to level up my operative up for that book, which is going to be like 11 and 12 or something. From where he's at now. And then, you know, I got the first book of the Devastation arc came in the mail as well. And I'm thinking, oh, this is something we'll have to play. And of course, you know, what kind of characters are we going to do there? I love operatives, but maybe we'll get somebody. Anyway, so I started thinking about operatives. So I thought, oh, we'll talk about operatives. And so right now, you know, in society play, I have a ghost operative, and primarily because that's the same type of operative I started with when we began Dead Sons, when we first started playing Starfinder.
Way back in the day.
That's like 2.5 years ago now, right?
Yeah, but it was still, it's funny how every group of players still has the same kind of, you get your own sort of in-jokes and language. We still make references to that campaign in our Dawn of Flame campaign now.
Well, primarily your character, Kelber.
I was pretty hapless, that's for sure.
Oh, but yeah, so, you know, I had a ghost operative there, which for me is almost like the stereotypical operative, kind of really kind of sneaky around and, you know, really good at infiltration and stuff. That's kind of what I thought about operatives. And then now you have started a new operative here for Dawn of Flame, which is a completely kind of different operative. And then since then, I have discovered other types of operatives. So I thought, you know what? We should talk about operatives.
Yeah, we've got very different is exactly kind of what I was going for, in that you shaped my view of what an operative is, right? By playing a ghost operative through so much of Dead Sons. But I've played some Starfinder Society as well, and it seems that ghost operative is actually pretty typical. When you say that's sort of the stereotypical operative, that's been my experience as well. And so that's why when I decided I was going to play an operative, I'm like, okay, what can I do that is very different than that? And with all the different options, it's frequently focus on some kind of skill, right, that you're going to be using for all your trick attacking. And when I saw survival, I'm like, well, that's kind of a appealing idea. That's very non-spy to be to be using. So I thought, all right, well, I'm going to try to build a character. I'm going to try to build an operative around survival. And then from there, I'm like, oh, well, that's wisdom. And, oh, Yosoki would be fun. And I could sort of get the character kind of gelled in my mind intentionally because I went as distant from ghost as I sort of thought I could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the things I came to appreciate is that, oh, you know, these other operators have really cool stuff to do as well when I saw yours. Now, when I built my operative to kind of fill in the play when you were GMing. Again, I kind of had this notion of what the ghost operative was. I didn't want to do an explorer operative. And so I decided, I actually started with the basic idea of, okay, I'll try a daredevil operative. And then with the name Daredevil, I thought, I'm just going to try to make Daredevil. You know? So that's, you know, that, and I don't know if that was the impetus for this particular operative, but that's kind of the approach I took, you know, very acrobatic. You know, my operative started off with blind fight and took the operative exploit blind sense. So basically he can see well. He doesn't need to see because he's got all these extra sensitive senses for detecting things. Also, I picked up Trap Spotter, as I told you before, and then made a skill focus in perception so that I could take 10 when I got to 7th level on my trap spotting. So that basically the notion is that he had almost this spidey sense, or Daredevil's case, to be able to see things, you know, before he got up to him. And it's really not an optimized operative for doing damage or sneaking around or anything, but it's pretty good at a lot of stuff, you know. It's pretty good at stuff, but it's not, you know, my other operative was like, oh man, it could sneak around like crazy. It never failed on, you know, trick attacks and stuff. I mean, just really did really well in that stuff. And this one, yeah, it's kind of okay. And then when you look at the specialization things that the Daredevil operative gets, it gets like a climbing speed and a swim speed or something, you know, gets some other modalities. So it's not terribly exciting compared to the ghost operative. I could, like, you know, higher levels, I could move through walls.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, that's the thing that made me want to get a ghost operative, is like, oh, I can phase through, you know, 5 feet of wall, solid material. Now, I've never used that in any of my characters.
But conceptually, right? You're like, this is, when you don't play a character, no, and nobody plays a character for specifically the numbers that are on the sheet in front of you. You play a character for the concept that they evoke. And that's a very important part of the concept they evoke, I think, is what awesome things down the line is it that this type of operative does.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I was thinking, you know, for that. Now, down the road, and when I was at PaizoCon, not this year because it was online, the previous year, the last one that was a face-to-face PaizoCon, I came across a player who had a spy specialization operative. Mm-hmm. And the neat thing about that is the associated skills were bluff in disguise. And so he built out his whole character for being able to disguise, you know, for infiltration, like to be, look like anybody, like perfectly had a disguise and all this kind of crazy stuff. And then being really good at bluffing and using that for feints and stuff like that as well. So, so the clever feint feat and things like that.
That actually seems to be a little bit moving into the envoy territory, because you'd expect an envoy to be good at those kinds of things.
Right. And that's what I liked about this character, is that, you know, typically your operatives are really good skill monkeys, except for the envoy tricks.
Right.
You know, envoy skills and stuff. And so this one was good at like everything except for like mysticism. So pretty good overall.
Well, and then mysticism is one of the non-operative things, but one of the many non-operative things. Do you mind if I give you a couple of numbers at the risk of being a little bit numbery here?
Oh, okay.
There are 20 skills in the game generally, and of the 20 skills, quite a big number, 13 of them, are skills that some operative can get or use or be part of. And a lot of these we've talked, you know, survival, because that's what I do for Dawn of Flame, acrobatics and stealth for ghosts, spy, we've talked about bluff disguise. But if there are going to be another specialization or other specialization, you'd be able to look at the 7 skills that haven't been used for an operative specialization and think, what kind of operative could do that? The skills that don't yet have anything connected to them: intimidate, life science, medicine, mysticism, which is why I was actually thinking about this, you just mentioned it, physical science, piloting, and then profession. I don't love profession as a skill, but the pairing that kind of matches up for me, I think, and I would be very surprised if some third party publisher hadn't done something like this, is a life science plus medicine operative. Somebody who is some sort of anatomist or vivisectionist, right? Something like that. You're like, I'm all about taking living creatures apart and putting them back together. That's what I do. And the, obviously the taking them apart is what the trick attack is, but you'd also be able to give yourself some, maybe some biohacker-esque kind of healing or the like.
Well, you know, so there's two thoughts I have on that. One is this foreshadowing a future hardcover perhaps?
Oh, no, no, no. This is me being, this is
no, no, no.
Channeling David N. Ross.
Yeah. I know you're not saying that this is, what I'm saying is, this makes sense, though, that, you know, if they were to introduce a new specialization, which oftentimes they do in hardcovers,
right,
this could be something that could come out down the future.
And it just pops out. This is actually something that I noticed a couple, you know, maybe like more than a year ago when I was looking at this. I've got a lot of respect for the types of freelancers that do very rules heavy stuff. David N. Ross is a good friend of mine, and he's got this real sense of looking at rules, where the intersections between them are and where the opportunities to grow the rules are. And I remember looking at these operative specializations, doing this kind of 7 out of 20 skill analysis, seeing the life science and medicine pairing. And I'm like, and I remember at the time I thought, oh, wait a minute, this must be how David N. Ross feels all the time when he sees stuff, because I have seen a gap where there is some design ability and I can kind of even see how you'd fill it. And that is really exciting from a rules perspective, I think. I don't get that type of inspiration off. My inspiration comes in the form of awesome things characters can do and especially awesome adventures to do. But these sort of rules things, they're not my specialty, and it's kind of exciting to see. So as soon as I had the opportunity to opine about a life science plus medicine operative specialization, I jumped for it.
No, I think that's, you know, it's funny. I teach entrepreneurship, and that's actually how a lot of entrepreneurs get started, right?
Really?
You look at the gaps. You look at the gaps and the offerings that are out there and figure out, well, does it make sense that this gap exists? That is, does nobody care about these things? Or is this that nobody has figured out how to properly apply, you know, some business model to make these things work? So in this case, I think it's just that I think that somebody has a plan for those things to be used. It doesn't make any sense not to, because it's such a natural pairing. I actually think, you know, intimidate and mysticism and all these other ones, it would make complete sense to have specializations related to those down the road. You know, so if we were to have a advanced magic book for Starfinder, then it would make sense to maybe bring out a mysticism or mystical operative specialization, you know?
And you can combine that because they do pairings, right? But they're still the as soon as you put two skills together, then you kind of that sort of creates something that is sort of unique to that. So mysticism, all right, well, it's something magical, right? But if your two skills are mysticism and bluff, well, then you've got somebody who's all about beguiling people, using charms, maybe somebody who sort of twists people's perceptions or their words around. Which is a very different feel than if you had, you know, mysticism plus perception, which lets you sort of see the hidden weave and weft of magic and do something with it.
So the other thing I was going to say about operatives, and when you mentioned the life science medicine kind of combination, is one of the things I've seen, not just recently here, but the last couple of cons, I've been doing a lot of conventions, so they're all kind of running together. So I've seen a couple of folks doing operative biohacker builds. And that is really neat because they can apply a lot of conditions then with a single shot onto individuals. And so, you know, they'll tend to be a little more operative heavy in a couple of levels of biohacker, I think probably 2 or 3 levels of biohacker. And all of a sudden they're putting on all kinds of sickness and, you know, other debilitations, you know, on to their target, in addition to doing some damage. And I ran across a couple of those in the 7 to 10 I was running, and I was like, wow, that is, you know, we don't have a lot of easy condition removal in Starfinder right now. Typically, it's you kind of wait it out. Most of the conditions are relatively short duration. And so to have somebody every single round put, be able to put multiple conditions that sometimes could last more than one round really is a huge benefit to the party. So looking at some sort of multi-classing with the operative, I think, is another good way to look at it.
Ooh, that's a good point. And those tell their own sort of stories too, right? An operative Solarian. I don't love it. Just when I say it out loud, I don't love it. But you can see somebody who is trying to pull on both of those worlds, depending on your specialization, as well as sort of a, you know, and I also can conjure, you know, weapons, armor, or blasts from the stellar power on top of that.
Well, like an operative technomancer, you know, higher levels, technomancers can conjure any weapon that they want, you know. So all of a sudden you have an operative that has an unlimited arsenal of specialty weapons to use for doing, you know, against different creatures and stuff.
Yeah, so, that's pretty neat.
You know, and when you look at technomancer and operative, dex and intelligence are really important to both of them, you know. So that's a good pairing of, you know, attributes across them. With one of the issues with Solarian is, You have to do typically strength, and you have to do charisma, and then if you're going to do operative on top of that,
you're gonna
a little intelligence, you know, and probably a little bit of dexterity. So yeah, crossing too many attributes to, you know, you got to get some synergies between the attributes.
Yeah, you're not leaning that way. An operative envoy might be a little bit better because at least it can be the kind of operative that has charisma skills like that, like the gentleman you were talking about, right?
Yep.
Who was all sorts of a face, throwing in a couple of improvisations. That's what they're called. That the envoys get.
Right. And I've seen that. And I've seen that. It kind of makes sense. I mean, again, the main reason why that works is if you multi-class with an envoy and you're not doing a high level, you know, a lot of levels of the envoy, you don't really need to put a lot of points in charisma. You can get by more with dexterity and intelligence and relatively low charisma.
Although I think every level you take in something that isn't operative, you're just delaying that sweet, sweet trick attack even further.
True, true. But it gets, you know, so one of the things that we noticed when we were playing through Dead Sons is like my operative was a huge damage dealer for a lot of that campaign.
I was
frontlining. I was doing everything, doing a lot of damage. Once we got to higher levels, and I think it's like levels 9 and above, 10 and above for sure. That's when your soldiers and Solarians really become big time heavy hitters. Part of it is there's this soldiers onslaught or Solarians flashing strikes where they get more attacks. In the case of Solarian, the attacks are at -3 instead of -4 for each of those attacks. Mm-hmm. And those things start adding up quite a bit to make it such that their damage will outpower even all the trick attack dice that you get with the operative.
Well, I think that's right. One of the things that I saw as well is when in Dead Sons, especially at the higher levels, when we were fighting multiple opponents, your operative, you could absolutely lay down a whole world of hurt on just one enemy.
Right.
But if it was several enemies, none of which were very tough individually, it was almost better to watch our soldier be able to make multiple attacks and split the attacks up and then knock people down as needed. So
or cleaving through things, you know. It's like, yeah, the operative doesn't. I think it's really nice at, you know, lower levels, you know, especially when you get up to, you know, 3d8, you know, relatively low level, and 5d8 as you're going up. That's like, wow, that's a lot of damage. But again, you're using small arms, and you're just not really getting that big strength bonus that a melee soldier can add, or a even a bombard soldier can add to ranged attacks and stuff.
Right. Yeah. You know what? I wonder, for as much single target damage as operatives can deal out, one thing that we never talk about around the table, I think virtually nobody does, is overages of damage. I mean, sometimes you only need to do five more hit points in order to kill something. And then the operative comes in and says, I do 34 hit points, right? well, you got kind of 29 wasted points at that point. And I wonder, operatives almost certainly outdo everybody else for wasted hit points.
You mean wasted damage points?
Wasted damage potential, because they hit so hard.
Well, I think, again, early on, when the enemies are going to be relatively low points and you have a whole party that's attacking them, that, yeah, it's going to be maybe a little swingy, you know, with the big dice. If you're doing 5d8, you know, you could do a whole lot or, you know, maybe not so much, depending on how lucky you are.
Or five, right?
Yeah. You know, again, that's where the Salarian and the soldier really kind of shine, because, you know, like my level, I have a level 13 soldier, and he's getting like plus 20 points of damage or whatever to every attack. So, you know, he's doing a 4d6 plus 20. That's a whole lot less swingy than, you know, 2d6, you know, plus
78 six. Or whatever.
Yeah, you know. So it's, you know, basically the difference is between consistently doing 50 and above per hit, and, you know, an operative maybe doing 35 consistently per hit. You know, it's just, I don't know. So, yeah, I we always marveled at how Scott would always say, you know, okay, here's the operative. He's going to do all this damage and stuff. And it's like, yeah, I did that for a while. But then, you know, our soldier is taken over. And then, like, in our party with Dawn of Flame, once we get up, you know, I think a couple more levels, once we get into the book five, especially into book six, you know, we got a Salarian and a Bombard soldier. We are just going to be, those two are just going to be laying down so much damage.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's already happening now. Even in this point in book four, near the end of book four, I remember at the beginning when I'm running monsters and I'm looking at the head of the initiative order and I'm thinking, all right, well, my monster is going to be able to go again because the operative isn't going to go first and kill me. But, you know, when I've got several different monsters on the board, but that's unreliable now. Our last couple of sessions have been, all right, well, maybe I won't even get to these people. It depends on, because the soldier is going to go and the Salarian is going to go and the operative is going to go. And any one of those can be putting out the consistent damage sufficient to really just blow past the hit points the enemies have. It's pretty neat. It's really everybody sort of stepping up to pull together that way. And I think it's really cool to see the damage dealers become real damage dealers.
Well, and I'm actually really, this is one reason why I'm excited for getting into Devastation Arc and that AP, hopefully after we're done with Dawn of Flame, is because I want to see, you know, what the damage dealing looks like from 13 to 20, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's going to be really cool to see. And then also that's where your casters, I think, the higher level spells, your higher level technomancers and mystics, that's when they get some really cool stuff.
Yeah, they've got, at that point, they're kind of throwing in not just the best spells that the game has, but they're getting up to the higher levels where they get sort of really cool abilities that they can pick. 14th level, a lot of classes, technomancers in particular, have some of their cool abilities that come in, I want to say, at 14th level. That seems to be a real sweet spot that the adventure paths never hit for stuff that you're able to achieve and do.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully we'll do that. And I'm really hoping to get the GM at least of one of those books to run it for us.
Well, I could probably talk to the GM of the third book.
Oh, the highest level of Starfinder play that we have?
That's right. Literally the highest level Starfinder adventure that exists. Dun, dun, dun. And I have not seen that yet. That ought to be... I tend to get these a few weeks, sometimes even maybe a month, month and a half in advance, because they come into our warehouse soon. But we have street dates to respect. Distributors are respecting the street date. We respect the street date. But people in the office can at least see one. And that's sort of fun. And I'm excited about being able to see this super high-level adventure that I wrote. Not only because, as always, I want to go through and see what's changed and think about why and become a better adventure author that way, but just to see the hold it in my hands, like this is the thing, this is the adventure that you don't even get to start until your 18th level. And that's yes. fun.
Now I'm looking forward to that. All right. Well, I think it's about time for dinner. My wife is making something wonderful tonight. So, yeah, I can, it's cooking behind me. I can.
So you got to come back from the kayaking trip and just basically hang out and chat with me while she had to come back from the kayaking trip and then start cooking.
Well, it was actually in the crock pot. It's a Italian thing, which would beef short ribs and something, ragu something or another. I don't know what it is. So it's not like the pre-prepared ragu sauce. It's like it's the name of it, and I don't know what it is, but it smells really good.
Well, it sounds fantastic. I can probably be up there in about an hour and a half.
Yes.
So yeah.
We're going to have leftovers.
You could leave some outside so we have no contact pickup of.
All right. Well, I think we'll have to call it. I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.